This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Thank you for joining us yet again for another fantastic episode. It's been fun to do these interviews as we've been doing them. I think we're up to like almost 170 episodes at this point. It's been kind of crazy to think about this journey because it's going back 3 or 4 years. And I don't know, selfishly, some of the really cool people I've gotten to talk to and some of the things I've gotten to learn. And with that, I'm certain that those longtime listeners have as well. Today is going to be no exception. We are joined by an industry leader that has been around for 1 or 2 years, but I'm going to let him introduce himself. We are joined by none other than Bill Lindsay. Bill, why don't you say hi to our audience and tell them a little bit about who you are.
Well, hello. And first off, thank you very much for inviting me to participate. I've been in the industry my whole adult life, so it's probably the easiest way to say it. But I started out as an operator, and I was a restaurant manager, not too long in the dish room, but that's where I actually started.
The sad part is so many of those great restaurateurs started washing dishes or bussing tables or barbacking, you know, as you meet people. So
it's true. And, you know, I've said in many meetings with people that are trying to explain to other operators how they should run their business. Mm-hmm. And I'm frequently quoted as the guy in the room saying, look, you've never bussed a table. Don't presume to understand the challenges that restaurant operators face. It's not always what it appears. But I've been in the industry my whole life. I actually got introduced to technology when I was a food and beverage director in Las Vegas. We were building restaurants and opening casinos, and we were on our fifth casino, and we were largely armed with pencils.
Yeah, which is really scary because way too many restaurateurs that we know are even still to this day. And that was how many years ago when you were armed with pencils?
Well, it was the early 1980s when I was running restaurants in Las Vegas. And I had the good fortune of working for a company that understood the need for technology. And this was before PCs, which made it even more adventuresome. We developed the first central purchasing application. So we went straight from 0 to 120 miles an hour and had a central purchasing organization that was communicating with 5 casino properties, AS400 and System 36 and lease lines. And it was quite the adventure.
I should do a poll on Twitter or something, or on this blog post that asks if anybody even knows what AS400 is or any of those other phrases, because I have a feeling that so many haven't. And so, talk to me a little bit about that journey. So, you know, you guys started there, and really, I think from there, the majority of your time has been spent on the tech side. So, talk to me a little bit about some of those adventures, and then we'll jump right into kind of what your newest venture is, because I love to hear the history of it, because I think it's really cool for. Especially those longtime listeners that may even remember what AS400 and some of those things that you worked with in the past look like.
Well, the AS400 is actually more current than the System 36 and the System 38 that we started on. But the interesting tidbit is that we needed to develop a system, and we knew how we wanted it to work, but there was no software back then for restaurants. Mm-hmm. So we hired a company in Las Vegas that wrote gaming software. So, you know, cage, cash tracking, credit, slot fills, all that sort of stuff. And they're the only developers that we knew. And the owner of that company is now my wife, and that's how I met her.
So, oh, wow.
I tell that story.
So started in the dish room and turned into a marriage, and now it's you know, 30 years in tech or whatever that looks like, 40 years in tech.
Yeah, here I am still doing exactly the same thing. So to some degree, I haven't progressed much, but I found a niche. And, you know, I'll get back to the fact that there were a lot of people that were trying to get into technology that were developing systems and had really no idea what the reality was in a restaurant or bar operation. So I came in and became somewhat of a liaison between the programmers and the users. And we developed an application called Remax Cost Control mm-hmm. on the PC. It was the first PC application for large enterprises like casinos. At one point, I was so cocky, I had a list of 5 casinos. And if somebody asked me for a reference, I say, you can call anybody in town except these guys.
Uh-huh. That's pretty
funny. Two of them were using the software that we had developed for Boyd Gaming. So It was a great start, but you know, moved on to PCs, joined Remax. And the interesting part is the guys I worked with at Remax are the same partners that I'm with today in Cogswell.
That's amazing.
Shout out my pal, Dave Douglas, who was the founder of Remax. Mike Brown was our developer and is our developer today. And Glenn Nelson, who handles all the integrations and implementations, training and support, and still does that for us today. So
that's incredible. I had no idea. I knew that you and Dave were there. I didn't realize that the whole team. So for those that may not be familiar with what Remax did, and then really that'll kind of, you know, because it went from Remax to where you're at between that and Cogswell and now ultimately Cogswell. Why don't we talk a little bit about kind of what business problems Remax solved and now, you know, 30 years later, you're still solving some of those same things.
Yes, you know, what Remax did was it put together real-world accounting at the time. Real World was a COBOL-based accounting platform.
I was just talking to a customer the other day that's still running that darn thing. I'm like, who has that thing still up and running? But they really focused on that restaurant niche so deeply. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. In fact, I read an article that some of the highest paid contract programmers are COBOL because there just aren't that many left.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of interesting. But what we did is Remax had two product lines. The one that most people know is the chain restaurant product that later was merged with Aloha to form the first Radiant Hospitality. My partner, Dave Douglas, was the first president of Radiant Hospitality. I've developed and distributed, supported, trained, and lived and breathed what we called Cost Control, which is a completely different platform, different technology. And had a great run, and then Windows came out.
Yep.
And for about a month, I got away with saying, hey, nobody wants a mouse in their kitchen. And when people stopped laughing, I knew I had to find another gig. And we didn't have the funds to develop both products for Windows. And clearly, the best business decision was the chain restaurant product. So that led me to Reno, Nevada, where I live today. And I had a nice run in between Cogswell and Remax with Compete Restaurant Management Systems. So I think I was 16 years at Compete. You know, we pioneered the whole single source, all-in-one database approach. And once that company was sold to private equity back in 2015, it was shortly thereafter that we founded Cogswell.
Wonderful. Well, why don't we dig into kind of where Cogswell's at, what, you know, kind of you guys have been around for, you know, 6 or 7 years since the founding.
Yeah, barely 3 years. We had the good timing to start our company right before the lockdown.
Yeah, that's always fun, right?
Well, you know, it turned into a blessing. And I think, you know, and I don't mean that in any way other than the fact that, you know, we had a lot of time on our hands there for a few months.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, being the entrepreneurs that we are, our developer, Mike Brown, dug in and executed what I would describe as about 2 to 3 years worth of roadmap in a matter of months without interruptions. And I learned to build a website. And when that was done, I learned to code in Salesforce. And so we built our infrastructure in such a way that once the lockdown ended, we really hit the ground running.
That's awesome.
It's been a very interesting run. You know, Cogswell is a completely different animal than all the other inventory systems that are out there.
Yeah, well, and I've gotten a chance. I've gotten a chance to see what you guys are doing at Cogswell. We've known each other, you know, from your days at Compete. You may have also known Art even when you were back at Remax. I don't know if you guys go back that far.
We do.
You know, I remember hearing about Remax, and there you guys had some really, really loyal Remax customers. Gonna be like, I just want to have it do what Remax did, and you know when you hear that out in the space that you know that Remax did something right. And quite frankly, there's a lot of people on the Compete side that really loved what you guys did for them. But those are both products that are in the past. So why don't we talk a little bit about kind of what Cogswell does for people, for those restaurateurs that aren't familiar with any of those three products? Why don't we kind of from a high level approach, what's the, you know, the main source of what they're trying to do to solve restaurant problems on the technology side?
Sure. So it begins with the actual system architecture. Every inventory product on the market out there today is still doing what we did back in the early 1980s, which is manually pounding in the data. You know, every item, the description, how it comes packed, how you might count it, how you might use it in a recipe. And then all the vendor items show up and they're all packed differently. And there's a constant struggle to map one to the other. And quite frankly, most companies that attempt to get all the way down to the recipe level tend to fail.
Yep.
They try real hard. And in fact, I've seen many, many, many companies do an excellent job of it until that one key employee moved on to another duty or another job. So part of the struggle has always been, you know, 2 months worth of manual data entry to set up a system, followed by constant maintenance. And, you know, the data tends to be unreliable. And, you know, the architecture is what causes that. And it's because of starting with this manually entered data that things tend to go sideways. So what we did was we built a system that automates the entire setup process of the inventory items. So, you know, whether you're using EDI or a direct connection to Cisco, US Foods, Gordon, Shamrock, and other broadliners, or if you're working with our friends at Plate IQ and doing the scanning of invoices, we've built a system that will basically consume that data. And instead of 2 months of manual data entry, we have customers set up and ready for inventory, usually in 2 to 4 days on average. We do it much less expensively. And when I say we, that's the key. Rather than trying to train every restaurant operator how to set up inventory and audit receiving and go through that whole process, it finally, the light bulb came on and we said, well, why don't we do this as a service? We know it better than anybody. And what we did, which I think is more interesting, is develop special tools that we use with our staff of what we call receiving auditors. So not only do we expedite the setup, but the cool part is that there's no receiving function in the restaurant. Usually systems tend to fail or at least be maligned, if not hated, is the process of trying to receive in the restaurant and having these invoices. So the cool part is we've automated that, but we back it up with a receiving audit service. And we develop queries that look for trouble. And our staff investigates, audits, and corrects data when it comes in incorrectly. So it's a combination of great technology, but the real glue is the customer service. And, you know, let's face it, we're in the hospitality business. People expect a certain amount of service. And usually the analogy I try to make to people is, if you bought an accounting platform that was constantly out of balance, would you keep it or would you buy a new accounting platform? So why would you work with an inventory product that's constantly wrong?
Well, and I think you in your description of kind of what you guys are doing at Cogswell, it's the common error that I find is that people, they know that food costs, and we've talked about it on the podcast, they know food and labor costs are their two highest costs within the restaurant. There's nobody that's run a restaurant for more than 5 minutes that doesn't know you've got to manage labor and you got to manage food costs. And so, but it's still, to your point, and you've been doing this for a long time, it's still super elusive. And so I'd love to kind of dig in a little bit to why, you know, you talk about what you guys have solved, but why don't we peel it back? Because I'm guessing, since this is something unique that you guys are doing at Cogswell, you saw systems try to get implemented, whether you're at Remax, you were at Compete, or quite frankly, you watch the competitors that compete with Cogswell struggle with those things. And so why don't we walk the audience through, for those that aren't as familiar with what a true perpetual inventory system needs to look like. You've got, you know, starting inventory and there's fraught with errors there. You've got your usage, it's fraught with errors there. You've got your theoretical usage, which is fraught with errors there. You've got your receiving of the goods in. Why don't we talk through kind of what does an overall inventory process look like? And then let's talk about where technology touches each of those points and where humans touch each of those points and how you guys have done something different. Because I'd love for our audience to get a little bit educated if they're banging it out with paper, pen and paper, they're banging it out with Excel, or they're trying to do their own thing, and then kind of really how something like Cogswell can expedite that process and really get them faster along that path and with more accuracy, as you alluded to.
Sure. So, you know, I still say today my biggest competitor is Excel. And there's a reason for that. You know, people want to make it as simple and straightforward as they can, but there are complexities to the process. So, you know, the setup is the hardest part. It's the daunting challenge to stand up a system. I like to say long enough to find out whether you did it right. So you build all these items, you go through the process, you do an inventory count, you get a valuation and you start looking at the numbers and you have to feed the beast.
Yep.
So to feed the beast, the receiving has to go in. You need to know, you know, invoice detail, credit memos, which items were received, which all sounds pretty straightforward, but the pack sizes.
I was going to say the pack sizes is always the one that, and then when Cisco decides to send you a different pack size of that case of chicken breasts and everything goes wonky because you're saying I received five cases and you really wanted to say I received five chicken breasts and now everything's out of whack. So
that's right. And it's true. And like, you know, they'll use the same item number, but they'll either change it to a different product or a different pack. And most inventory systems that are attempting to automate these processes, they blow up because it's disparate data, it doesn't match, and you get erroneous information. So, you know, setup is troublesome. Inventory counts, you've got to do, but most people are doing inventory on Excel, if not in a standard inventory product. Mm-hmm. So goal one is to make it look like a spreadsheet because that's what people are accustomed to. Goal number two is to do the receiving process in such a way where all these disparities are accounted for and you get reliable receiving information. And then, you know, there's the middle functions like transfers, if you have a central commissary, if you're doing batch production, and I could go a half hour about batch, you know, and for those of you that have never done batch production, think of it this way. If you're baking cakes, someone needs to enter that I baked a cake so that the inventory knows to deplete the flour and the sugar and all the eggs and other ingredients and roll that cost into the cake. Well, the problem is most kitchens don't have the time or the discipline to enter all the batches that they make.
Yep.
So, you know, one of the things that we've done is we've looked at each one of those steps and said, okay, if you don't want to produce the cake, we'll let you count it. And we'll give you a variance on the ingredients, if not the cake itself. If you transfer a cake and you don't produce it, then we'll deplete all the ingredients and do the theoretical usage so that people don't have to enter the production at all. So we look for ways to give people a solution to the problem in the context of what they do know how to do, which is count and receive and transfer products, without having to do all of the advanced, you know, steps that people would do normally in inventory systems. But I think the toughest one are the theoreticals.
Yep. So, oh yeah.
Putting aside the actual cost of goods, it's coming up with a recipe for every item that you sell. And it doesn't sound that daunting until it's your job to do it. And
yep.
What we did is when we plug into North Star or any POS system, the first thing Cogswell does is it builds all the menu items and modifiers in Cogswell that it finds in the point of sale system. That way the user's not entering the item and the category and the price and the ever elusive POS code, which moves around like vendor item numbers. So we solve that by automating it. Now, you still got to enter the ingredients. So let's not brush.
Yeah, nobody's. You guys aren't going to be able to say how many ounces of beef are going to go on that burger patty. Somebody needs to say that there's, you know, a 7-ounce patty or whatever it is.
That's right.
So to that
somebody's got to maintain it. Yeah.
Yep. No, for sure.
And so generally what we do is we try to make it as easy as we can. We've built a very deep library of units of measure. So instead of just weighted ounces or grams or fluid ounces or whatever. We've got cookies and tortillas and cups and pints and teaspoons and tablespoons. So it's the project is to enter all the ingredients. Well, what people don't think of is if I'm going to enter an ingredient for my cheeseburger, one of the ingredients is the secret sauce. So I need that recipe first.
Yep.
So one of the things that I coach people on is to think in their minds and follow the product. So thing number one, we're going to buy the product. It's going to come through the back door. It's going to come in raw. Then what happens? Oh, then we batch it into this, that, and the other. So there, this, that, and the other are three recipes that need to be entered as quickly as possible so that you can enter the actual menu item detail into each recipe. But the other thing I coach people on is, you know, if you're a steakhouse, let's not worry about the cherry tomato and the sprig of parsley.
Yep.
Let's worry about the beef, the lobster, and the crab. So there is an approach for what I call center of the plate, you know, key item usage. So if I'm buying tenderloin and I've got a full filet, a petite filet, and I use the tips for whatever, then let's start there. Let's just enter those into the menu items where they're consumed or sold, and let's get a number on tenderloin that we can really trust.
Yep.
And if you get people to think of it that way, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine last week, and he made the observation that it's amazing in all the years we've been doing this that it's all 80-20.
Yeah, no, very much so.
Still 20% of your ingredients or 80% of your costs. So why don't we count 20% of the ingredients? Let's put those ingredients into recipes and let's start there. And if you do that, you stand an excellent chance of getting to a theoretical usage that you can manage your cost of goods with. And by the way, this whole idea of, hey, my budget's a 28% food cost and I hit a 27, so I'm a hero. You know, forget that. You know, percentages don't translate to bottom line profit. What we really want to know is how efficiently are they handling each of the high cost products. So instead of just comparing percentages and declaring victory, let's see how much tenderloin we bought and how many steaks we served and determine whether we served as many steaks as we could have, as opposed to, well, in general, our food or bar costs look pretty good.
Yeah, no, I love so many of those lessons because I've watched so many people. The batch recipes is a classic one where they're making, and it's like, well, we're short flour and egg and sugar. It's like, no, you're not, because it's already produced and it's in that batter for the, you know, it's in that batter for the pancakes sitting in the walk-in. Oh, I didn't think about that. Or the other thing that they get so fixated on the parsley, and it's like, nobody's walking out with any parsley, but I promise you leave a tenderloin out for too long, you know, it's going to change some stuff. If two lobsters walk out the door, or, you know, two or three full tenderloins walk out, or, you know, guacamole, you know, the avocados are gone. So look at those items that have the highest cost percentage. And so I love some of that wisdom. I'm going to have you break down, Bill, the idea behind theoretical, because I think there's a lot of misconception when I talk with restaurateurs about what actual food cost is versus what theoretical food cost is. And I have to have the same argument with them that says, yes, that's great. I sold, you know, 25 petite fillets, but none of that matters, because actual food cost is how many fillets did I start with? How many fillets are left at the end? How many did I add to the pile? And that's my actual usage. It doesn't matter how many sold on the point of sale, because my actual usage is, what did I start with? What did I add to the pile by bringing it in the back door? And what do I have left at the end of the day? That's my actual usage of tenderloin. But people oftentimes, at least in my experience, conflate those two with theoretical versus actual.
Yeah, they do. And it's one of those conversations that usually suffers from a misunderstanding of jargon. So I always start out with people saying, look, let's establish the language we're going to use to communicate here. Actual cost of sales is what hits your income statement. You know, just as you described, I started with this much product, I purchased this much and received this much product, and here's what was left. Mm-hmm. You know, it's straight math. Whatever's left subtracted from everything that you had to work with is your usage and your cost of goods. The problem with that is the only way to evaluate that usage is to compare it with what you should have used. And I usually use pretty simple analogies, like, let's just say we're selling hamburgers and that's all we have. You know, at the end of the day, if I sold 100 hamburgers, but I used 105 buns, the question is why? Mm-hmm. Where'd the other 5 buns go? Are they stale? Did we drop them? You know, because nobody overportions a bun.
Yep.
You know, it's one thing to be scooping potato salad and overscoop or use the wrong disher. But if you buy your buns and you count them and you used 105, but you can only account for 100 in sales, maybe we have a waste problem. Who knows what's going on? Maybe somebody's helping themselves. And by the way, I'm always alarmed at the number of people that jump straight to theft.
Yeah.
You know, all the employees are stealing my product. It's like, no, nobody's going to steal your bun. You know, they might have been hungry and had a sandwich, but it's usually a control problem.
Yep.
So
a portioning problem, a control problem. Yeah.
So the only way to know your actual versus theoretical is to count the number of hamburgers that you sold, and that's the number of buns you should have used. So in simple terms, that's what we're doing. Well, where it gets complex is if you're buying, you know, primal cuts of beef, and you're breaking those down into 3 or 4 different final plate menu items, and you've got the waste to deal with, you've got purge to deal with, all of those variables. And so it can become complex if you think of it that way. But generally what I tell people is it gets complex if you try to fool the numbers. Mm-hmm. So for example, people will go in and say, okay, well, I'm cutting tenderloins and I'm going to get a 90% yield. Well, no. Why don't you plan to get full yield out of the product and learn what the yield is instead of Karnak or guessing at the yield? People all the time are looking for ways to make the numbers match. And I tell them, no, it's the variance. That's where the magic is. Because mm-hmm. let's put it this way. Let's say that we're cutting tenderloins, and let's say we're getting a 90% yield on average, that historically that's what's happening. And this is a true story that I did in my career. Well, all of a sudden, the yield went down. Same people, same staff, same portioning. What the heck's going on? So I started at the back door, and when the tenderloins were delivered, I put a thermometer in them and found out that they weren't that cold. Well, what happens when beef in the bag isn't that cold? It purges. In other words, it bleeds out. Mm-hmm. So what was happening with our beef, and this is in a casino operation where we're going through tons, literally tons of beef. Our yield went down because the truck wasn't refrigerated properly. And I had to have a conversation with my supplier and say, you're delivering beef to me that's bleeding out in the truck because of the temperature. I would have never known that had mm-hmm. I not tracked the actual numbers over time and not fudge them. And what ended up happening, and you like this one, Jeremy, I ended up, I would walk into my kitchen with a report and I would just stare at it for a while. Then I'd say, can anybody explain to me what's happening with the king crab? And I had no clue there was a problem with king crab. But when I stared at a report and asked the question, everybody looked at me and was like, well, I don't know. What do you think's happening? Boy, the numbers are off, and it just happened here recently. So it developed a culture that, boy, this guy looks at everything. He knows what he's looking at. If he says there's a problem, then we need to keep our eyes open. And so it was a constant kind of a dance that we did where people understood that if I was coming in asking questions, that it was reason for everyone to at least be concerned and try to help us solve the problem.
That's, it's such wisdom there that I think, to your point, a lot of people do go back to that whole idea of, my guys must be stealing it. The other story, and this is also a true story, I'll kind of go through it a little bit, is not all yields are created equal. We had worked with a family dining brand that as crazy as this is, they bought sides of beef and broke them down in the back of the store.
Yeah.
As like a Denny's type replacement in Southern California. And I was like, what? You do what? And then the whole yield conversation was, when I'm making French onion soup, it yields differently than when I'm making tenderloins, to your point. And so you had to go through that whole conversation of some yields are 102% and some yields are 78%, depending upon what cuts you were making, what you were doing with that product. And so it's a pretty interesting concept. You threw something else out that I'd love to just throw into there, which it'll be a shameless plug for the guys over at Plate IQ, but I'd love to understand, because really the thread that I want to go on here for a little bit after we get through the Plate IQ conversation is how you guys are doing it differently at Cogswell as it relates to automation and relates to some of that audit product that you talked about, as well as kind of the ways that you guys go to market, because so many of the things you guys are trying to take out of the hands of the restaurant operator and put in there. But why don't you tell our audience a little bit more about Plate IQ? And you know what, quite frankly, after we get done, you can do an intro to some other people. Maybe we can have them on the show as well, so they can talk at length about what they do, because I know they've got a fantastic product that is helping quite a few restaurants out there.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. In fact, full disclosure, after the sale of Compete, I was doing some consulting and advisory work. And I was an advisor at Plate IQ. And it was really during that time that I'm looking at all the wonderful data that they've collected. And I called my now partners again and said, you got to see this. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing with Plate IQ. What they have solved is the problem of entering the invoice data into a data entry screen and replaced it with either a phone app where you take a picture of an invoice, or you can scan the invoice in. You can email it. You can drop it into a browser window. So there's more than one way to feed the invoice information into their platform. Now, there's other companies out there doing a similar thing. And I'll mention Bill.com, for example. A lot of accounting companies love Bill.com. Well, the difference between Plate IQ and Bill.com is Bill.com says, oh, it's a Verizon invoice, so it must be a utility bill.
Yep. What
Plate IQ does is they read every line item on the invoice. So, you know, when you get an invoice from Cisco, you've got food, you got paper, you might have cleaning supplies on it. There's a lot of different things happening. So what they started doing was reading every line item on the invoice and assigning that to a general ledger account. And by doing that, what we're able to do at Cogswell is we use their API. You know, remarkably, there's a lot of companies that interface with Plate IQ, but last I checked, I don't know any that are really using the API the way that we do. But think of it this way. If they scan an invoice in from the restaurant or email it or take a picture of it, it's converted into data and it automatically downloads into Cogswell and does the receiving process.
Yep.
So the item number, the pack size, the cost, and all that information. So what Plate IQ has done is they've built out a full accounts payable automation platform, and they've done a remarkably good job of it. What we did is said, well, they're starting Plate IQ to solve their accounts payable problem. We can use their data to solve the inventory receiving problem. So we have what we call hands-free receiving.
Yep.
So we'll either download it from Plate IQ. You can use vendor EDI. So there's other scanning options that we could introduce as well to help people scan invoices. But Plate IQ really is the leader in those terms. Now, there's also Extra Chef, and I know a lot of people have tried Extra Chef. They were acquired last year by Toast.
Yeah, they were on the show. Their founder was on the show probably 2 years ago, just before the Toast acquisition. And then he texted me later. He's like, I don't know if it helped at all, but being on your show was awesome because I just got a big check. I'm like, cool. Good for you, man. You know, good for you. I'm like, hey, where's my portion of that? You know? Yeah, exactly. So I didn't see any of that money, but he seems to be doing well so far. But yeah, the guys at Extra Chef are doing something pretty similar.
Yeah, they are. And here's the difference. You know, when I was an advisor at Plate IQ, they were going down the same road as Extra Chef, trying to introduce a few inventory features.
Mm-hmm.
And as an advisor, I said, look, this is not for you. You don't have any idea the battle that you're wading into, taking on hospitality, food and beverage inventory. It's a much more difficult task than what you think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Cogswell is our fifth generation system.
Yeah.
So I like to say we've had four other turns at bat, and more specifically, our competitors are making the mistakes today that we might have made 20 years ago. So there's a lot to learn and some very hard learned lessons, you know, trials and errors and failures and successes. So one of the things that we did is, you know, we went to the AP automation companies and said, look, we're really good at this inventory stuff. Your data is really the grease in the wheel. We'd mm-hmm. like to interface with everybody and make it easier for operators. The difference between Plate IQ and Extra Chef is Extra Chef decided to go it alone, and Plate IQ decided to work with partners and find solutions. And it's the old best of breed versus single source argument that we've been hearing ever since Compete.
Yeah. You know,
I like to say I had something to do with pioneering that single source value proposition, but I'll tell you what we learned. You know, first off, you end up with maybe not the best version of each module. You know, you're serving so many different masters. I tell the story that it's kind of like going to the buffet. You know, if you're in Las Vegas, you can go to the buffet and for, you know, $10, you can have steak and lobster and spaghetti and, you know, whatever it is that you want to choose. And they're all okay. And if you're really hungry, that's great. But if you really want steak and lobster, there's a restaurant just down the way over here that does it exceptionally well.
Yep.
So it's that same kind of an approach. And, you know, the real benefit that we've introduced with Cogswell is we're agnostic. We'll pull invoice data wherever we can find it. So EDI, AP automation, other scanning options that are available. And that saves 2 to 3 hours a week in the restaurant.
Yeah.
People trying to pound that data in. All the manual entry with these systems is what really cripples them.
That was going to be one of the things that I wanted you to dig in a little bit on before we wrap for the day. We're getting close to kind of time, which is really the unique thing that I've heard you guys are doing is anywhere that you can take the data that already exists within the restaurant, whether it's stuff from Plate IQ, or it's the recipe data, or it's the point of sale data, everywhere that you can, you guys are doing everything in your power at Cogswell to bring that data in. And then you add on top of that a service, you know, that that the restaurants can subscribe to related to helping them audit those things. Because they're, I mean, I say it all the time in the North Star world, you know, you are making hamburgers or you're making steaks. You're not a technologist. Stop trying to be a point of sale expert. Let, you know, pay us to do what we do. And I feel like you guys have done much of that at Cogswell, which is part of where I think you guys are finding a lot of your success. Is you're not expecting them to understand how to do all of these things. You guys have got people on staff that are either technologists or are, you know, former operators that are data entry people that understand how to look at these things and find that, you know what, you receive 50 cases of chicken instead of 50 chicken breasts. And they're going to catch those things and come back and go, your food cost is way off because you picked the wrong pack size when you were receiving this invoice, or it was scratched off on the invoice, or whatever that might look like. So talk to me a little bit about not only the what, but why you guys went down that route. Because I feel like in my world, as I've gone through hundreds of these implementations, some that worked, some that failed, many of them fail because they expect the restaurant operator to understand the technology and the operations and have the time to run a restaurant and do all of these data entry things. So,
yeah, especially in a tight labor market, huh?
Yeah.
That make it fun.
Yeah, very much so.
Here's the thing. You know, first off, when you subscribe to Cogswell, the receiving audit service is included. You know, I like to say you're getting a full-time equivalent and it's free. You don't pay anything for it. What we've done is we've learned when we first started Cogswell, we built it with all these solutions and started training people how to solve the problems that invariably will show up. And in trying to teach people to do it, we realized they're not going to do it.
Yep.
It's they're either too busy or it's not something that they feel comfortable doing. So what we learned, especially with some key customers, is it would take us 10 minutes to fix the data rather than spending, you know, an hour trying to explain to everybody why it's wrong and how they can fix it. So that started a trend. You know, initially, you know, we had a little internal joke. It was like the man behind the curtain and the wizard.
Yeah, I love that.
And we said, you know, why don't we productize the receiving audit service, roll it into the monthly licensing fee, and maybe we won't have as much profit per customer because we keep our prices very competitive, but we'll have a higher retention rate and a faster implementation. You know, if you're faced with a choice between manually entering your inventory and spending 2 months doing it, or paying Cogswell less than $1,000, we'll have you set up in 2 or 3 days, and you begin to use the software, and you don't have to worry about receiving or maintenance. It's kind of hard to say no.
Yep. So
it got us in the door with a lot of companies that were skeptical, and it was too good to be true is what I kept hearing. And so we would start doing the inventory with them. They counted, we managed the data, and it was a night and day. I mean, it was really a cathartic kind of a moment. And we started getting leads from our customers where they were telling their friends, you got to try this. This is different.
Yep.
And that's really what got us going. So, you know, the whole automation aspect is a big piece of what we do, but the thing that makes it work are the auditors. So if we see the cost change on an item, you know, what I'll call a significant cost change, it pops up on the dashboard of one of our auditors, and they go in and investigate. And they look at the last invoice compared to this invoice. They make sure it's the same vendor, the same item. And if the pack size changed, they make the change. You know, many vendors are really reluctant to mention that that's $5 a pound. And then they say, oh, you ordered 5 cases of steaks and they're $5. Well, it's $5 a pound. And of course, we know that when we look at the data, but not every operator does. So in our software, if all of a sudden it goes from a $5 pound to a $5 case, we immediately flip it to the pound and solve the problem for the customer.
Yep.
All that kind of stuff. You know, you're buying liter bottles of Jack Daniels, and one day they substitute the 750s. Most inventory systems freeze. You know, Cogswell, we've got two different vendor items that are packed differently, counted differently, but you can connect them into a combined item for an ingredient and a recipe. So we've done all of the solution solving that we can do to make it as easy as possible for our customers to get reliable data. And we back that up with our own receiving audit service, and we include it with the price of the software.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And I'm not going to lie, I've been doing this for a long time. And when you guys told us how quickly that you guys could get customers up, I was like, you guys are full of crap. This is not going to actually work this way. And part of why Bill's on the call is really just, you know what, I've watched it work. I've watched the way that they've been able to go to market, and I'm still blown away. But I think a lot of it goes back to, and Bill and I talked about this before we hit the record button, is the fact that you guys have done it before. You guys know where the sticking points are and where people fail, and where applicable or where even possible, you guys have done a great job of building technology that can help automate and solve some of these things. And so this is not intended to be a commercial. It was really, I want everybody knows that food cost is a really big challenge within the restaurants. It's only getting worse with some of the inflationary stuff going on right now. And just, you know what, but it always is going to be one of your top two cost drivers. It's either food cost or labor cost, depending on what market you're in. 100% of the time, it's going to be one of those two, and so you got to have a solution for it. And I'm here to say that while I think some solution, and including paper or Excel, is better than nothing, having a solution like what these guys have done at Cogswell is something that every restaurant, I mean, it's one of our top five. If you go to the blog, it's one of the top five things that we say you have to have when you're operating a restaurant. You got to have a point of sale system. You got to have a labor management system. You got to have a food cost system, because if you don't, you've got money walking out the back door, and it doesn't matter how much more you sell. If you guys don't do the right thing from a food cost and inventory perspective, you could sell $10 million worth of food and make zero profit because you had poor food costing, or you weren't charging the right amount, or. So there's tons of different ways that that you can implement systems like Cogswell. And Cogswell's not the only one, but they've done some pretty unique things that I think our audience should heed and look for in whatever solution they're choosing to go after. But what did we miss? What did we miss talking about today in the call? We went a whole bunch of different ways, and I knew we could probably sit and talk for 2 hours about what restaurants are doing wrong and how we can help them out. But is there anything that we missed that you would want to share with our audience before we wrap up?
You know, there's a lot of little things that I'd be happy to talk about. You know, things like people will cost out a menu item and they don't respect the fact that they're prepping some of those products in-house, and they don't track the labor cost for the prep. So mm-hmm. they introduce a new item on the menu and it hits their goal for cost of goods and drives their labor cost up.
Yep. You know,
a lot of that kind of stuff that people miss. But generally, what I'd like to say is that, you know, we really are here to help, and that we'd like to work with any company that's interested in solving their food cost or their bar cost and understanding better the usage of their products. So don't forget the hyphen. It's cogs-well.com. If you have an opportunity to take a look at our website and would certainly like to speak with me, I'd love to speak with you.
Yeah. And as you guys can tell from the last 40 minutes or so of recording, Bill's a wealth of knowledge, has done this for a long time. And while he's always going to take an opportunity to tell you why Cogswell is the solution for you, I'm certain he's going to take your phone call and help you out, even if you're on a competitive product and want to talk to him, because he's been around doing this a while and knows that it's a really round world, and you may not be at that restaurant brand next week or next month or next year, and hopefully you'll still think about him. So if people want to get in touch with you, Bill, what's the best way? Is it just to jump on the website, cogs-well, and put in an inquiry about taking next steps?
Absolutely. On our landing page at the very bottom, there's a little contact form. So just give me your name and email and hit send. That goes straight to me, and I'll be in touch pretty quickly. And I appreciate you saying about helping people with more than just food cost. I get calls from people that I've worked with over the years that say, gosh, we're thinking about a new point of sale. Who do you recommend? We're looking at a new accounting platform. Who do you recommend? And I always enjoy those calls, because to me, that's the satisfaction of knowing that I've done a good job, that I didn't mm-hmm. solve a problem, but I made a contact and maybe a friend that will rely on me for advice and help. So I'm happy to give anybody any help that I can along the way. And forgive me for over pitching my product. I told you before we got started that at some point you may have to pull me up. I've been doing this so long, I just quickly fall into the pitch.
Yeah, no, and I think you did a great job. Again, I know that our audience, not everybody's, you know, in a place where they are, you know, have the time, have the money, have the energy to implement a new solution today. But I think you've given a lot of wisdom as to, you know, how things you should be thinking about. And really more often than not, I think a lot of times, and we've talked about it on the podcast multiple times, oftentimes it's this overwhelming, undaunting task of, I don't know how to do it. And so because I don't know how to do it, I don't do anything. And I think the guys at Cogswell and a lot of our guests recently understand that the restaurants and the plight that they're in and are at a place now where between the APIs, the technology talking to each other, they can really get you up to speed and get you what you need with minimal effort from the operator, just the buy-in to make it happen, the buy-in to do the work a little bit, but they'll walk you through the process. And so, Bill, I can't thank you enough for taking the time. I know we just came out with a press release, you know, earlier in the year about North Star integrating with Cogswell. We're excited about the partnership, but not just that. I'm excited to know that you're out there and you guys are doing such fantastic things for the restaurant industry that's gotten their teeth kicked in the last 3 years. So it's been fun to watch your guys' journey over the last couple of years.
Thank you so very much. And I do really appreciate the invitation to join you here today and look forward to seeing you at the next conference, if not before.
Absolutely. Absolutely. To our audience, guys, we know that you guys have got lots of choices of podcasts to go out and listen to. It seems like there's a new one every day, every week, every month. And so we appreciate those loyal fans out there. While you guys are online, we also have a once a month newsletter that if you haven't already subscribed to it, I'd love you guys to. You get a consolidated list of just all of the podcasts, all of the blog posts, everything that we post on a monthly basis. Once a month, not going to sell the list, not going to spam you, not going to do anything other than make sure that you guys stay up to date. Bill, thank you again for our time. And to our audience, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.